You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. This is episode number 54. G'day everyone and welcome again back to Tim Topham TV. I'm so glad that you're watching or listening wherever you are in the world. It's great to have you, great to have me in your earbuds, I was going to say. I wasn't actually sure where I was going with that one. It's great that you're listening and I do hope that you get a lot out of today's episode. We're talking to Mike Verter, who I'm going to introduce you to shortly, about how he teaches online in a hugely scalable way and makes a significant amount of income on the side. Before we dive in, I would like to introduce you to Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype, which is the fantastic video course I've been talking about from Melody Payne this month. If you want to be the most forward-thinking and trend-setting teacher in your area, if you're looking to increase your client base, teaching hours and income, and if you need a perfect solution to cut down on your makeup lessons, then teaching online is for you. And this month on the blog and the podcast is all for you too. Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype will help you develop the online studio that you've always wanted. You will discover what equipment you need for teaching online, as well as exactly how to set it up for the optimal online teaching and learning experience. You'll also be introduced to policies and payment options, valuable teaching tips and some hints, and a list of the pros and cons of online teaching and more, so that you can begin teaching online lessons confidently and professionally and avoid making a whole lot of rookie beginner errors. Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype also includes exclusive access to a private Facebook community of other online teachers, where you can ask questions, share video clips, and chat about your online teaching experiences. Learn to Teach Music Lessons on Skype will answer your questions about online music lessons. It'll help you gain the practical knowledge, skills, and confidence you need to start teaching online and show you how to enhance your studio, maximize your teaching efforts, and set your studio apart, taking it to the next level. Head to the show notes page for today's episode to get a discount code for this course and a link to find out more. And the show notes for this episode are at timtopham.com/episode54. Remember too, guys, that transcripts and full video access is now available for every episode. If you prefer reading or would like to print out and read or just have on standby the notes for this interview, you can grab a full transcript at timtopham.com/episode54. So Mike Verter, now this guy's an absolute guru when it comes to teaching online. And if you've ever wondered about how you can supplement your one-on-one face-to-face piano teaching, even if you're doing groups already, then this is a fantastic option for you. Mike makes 50 to 60K on the side teaching online just by having online courses and online live events that are completely scalable. So once he's actually recorded them, they go into a repository and people can buy. And you'd be really surprised at just how little he charges for these, but what an impact it can have on his teaching income. The great thing is, of course, that this is something that any of us can do. The technology is out there. It's not difficult to use. And we've already heard in the last 2 weeks with Mario and also Melody about just how simple it is to get started. And of course, there are options. You can pay a lot if you really want really top-notch software, but you don't have to. And that's the great thing about it. You can get started and you can do exactly what Mike is doing using just some really simple things. Today's guest, Mike Verter, knew he wanted to compose music for film when he watched Star Wars aged 5 and just fell in love with John Williams' score. He started writing music and composing film scores in his early teens and is now an in-demand film composer and visual effects artist based in LA. Film score credits include Don't Blink, Inspector Mum, and Forbidden Warrior, and he's literally worked on hundreds of other projects. I can't mention them all now. While working full-time in the industry, he also runs regular online training events and masterclasses for musicians and artists around the world, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. So during this month, we kind of started with the one-on-one FaceTime Skype lessons with Melody. Last week, we talked with Dr. Mario Ajero about scaling up and trying to use, or how you can use pretty cool technology to really upscale and go high tech in your online lessons if you choose to. Today, we're talking about online learning and teaching on a really big scale, and how Mike exactly does it. He gives away all his secrets. We talk about all the technology, and in the show notes today, you're going to find links to everything he talks about, links to some of his free online courses, the equipment he uses, all sorts of stuff. He's giving it all away, and I'm so very thankful. It was a fantastic interview. I had great fun on it. Remember that you can grab the full transcript, and you can watch the video of this episode at timtopham.com/episode54. And without further ado, I think it's time to introduce Mike. Here we go. Mike Verder, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All the way from sunny Los Angeles. It's summertime over here, yeah. Right?
It is. Always, sort of.
And we're struggling through our winter, which to Melburnians is always freezing cold, but nothing compared to what half the states gets.
Okay.
Now, look, I'm really interested in hearing a little bit about your story, how you started teaching, what your training was in, and kind of what you're doing now. Can you give us a bit of background?
Yeah, well, in terms of teaching, I had no intention of teaching. It happened by accident. I was just I was a working composer. I am a working composer. I've been working since I was 16. And I had joined a forum, you know, an online forum for composers. And I would post some of my work, just sketches mostly. And right from the time I started posting work, people would ask questions. Other composers would ask questions about pretty much every aspect of writing music, about the composition, the orchestration, or performance techniques, or studio issues, even things related to the business and all this sort of thing. And over a course of like 6 months to a year, the questions got, there were so many of them, I just couldn't answer them anymore. I was doing that all the time in email and or on the forum. I was spending way too much time on it. And of course, I wanted to answer, because they were asking the exact same questions that I asked when I was coming up, but you can never really get straight answers, especially from professionals who are working. You know, you always get this, you always feel like there's some sort of secret. It's like the nuclear launch codes, you know, people won't tell you what the real truth is about business negotiations or what their tricks are when they write. So what I did was I thought, okay, you know what I'll do is I'll do a couple of free podcasts. I'll do a couple of podcasts and a couple of YouTube videos, and I'll put them on. And this will probably take care of that, except it went exactly the opposite way, because now people had little pieces of media they could share. So it got there was just more and more interest in this. And so I sort of informally said, well, look, you know, if I did like a, you know, like a masterclass series on these various disciplines, is that something you guys would be into? And there's a lot of interest there. So, like I said, without really intending to, but having the teacher's spirit or something, I decided, all right, well, let's just do this. So I didn't have much of a game plan when I started. I knew, well, I could talk about pretty much anything in the industry, and I sort of thought, well, like, you know, how long should the classes be? An hour and a half, something like that. And I picked a price point, and then I just started, They grew in popularity pretty quickly, and now I have a really, you know, nice core group of people who come, and there's more every day, pretty much. Yeah.
And so, what does the outcome look like today? How many lessons do you provide? How many students do you teach? Do you have the numbers?
Well, you know, it's hard to. What I did was, the classes, I do them live, and I do them on like Friday nights in Los Angeles time. And they're very like informal. They're sort of, they're like, it's almost like a hangout. And there's a structure, there's a plan for the class. And then I take questions, and the live people help shape the class, because they'll ask for, you know, more clarity on a point. And I've done to date, I think 24 or 26 classes over the course of the 4 years. So they're not regular. It's usually between gigs. And I'd say each class, I mean, I'd have to do the math, but the class, they sell for, I sell them for $30. I make them $30 because I wanted to make it super cheap. I wanted to make it. Well, yeah, because the way I figured it was, if I knew when I was studying with a professional myself, like it would cost me like about $125, $150 an hour for a guy who had, you know, a 30-year pedigree in the business. And there's kids coming up, they can't afford it. That's ridiculous. So I wanted to make it, and it wasn't going to be about the money. Like I said, this was all just gravy. I wasn't planning on doing it. So I figured, well, I'll give him, you know, $30. That's near impulse buy. And just for once in the life, they'll get more than they paid for. You know, I just thought, like, this will just be one little piece of justice in this world. But then that works is, you know, then if 100 people sign up for the class, you know, and I don't do any prep really, or maybe an hour. And actually the classes don't go an hour and a half. I think the shortest class I ever did was 3 hours. The longest one was just a couple of weeks ago. It was 9 hours. It was just 9 hours on the air. Cause nine I'll stay hours. On until, yeah, in fact, I have a free one that's on YouTube, which is 6 hours. And
oh
it's
my
just
goodness.
Because if that's how it's going, if people have questions, I want them answered. And if it's still staying engaging, then I'll just keep going. So it ends up being this really sick deal for people.
Wow.
It's packed full of information. It's super cheap. How many have been ordered? I have to check the numbers. I mean, the classes, I'd say, I don't know if this is a lot or not, but I think right now, I think they make between, you know, maybe 50 or 60,000 a year in sales.
Sounds great. Sounds really good. Well, the thing is that you're able to scale it, and that's why I really wanted to focus on this online teaching concept because it is such an incredible way to scale what you're doing. So you can make that kind of money.
It's not a full time thing, but once the class is done, people can buy it after the fact.
Mm.
So. You know, that's the thing is that I always encourage people to come to the live show because then you can ask questions and then it's like literally one-on-one, especially if I'm saying, listen, I'm going to sit here until you have gotten your attention. So there's people who will make sure that they show up for the live ones, but then there's other people who, like if they live in Europe and it's always 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, but then they'll buy it after the fact and then they can watch it as many times as they want to. So, you know, it's sort of got an evergreen product.
Yeah,
the first classes that I did are right now somebody's first class they just bought today. And typically then they just go down the line and end up. So, you know, so it's worked out that way. And then they stack on top of each other.
Yeah, it's great. Because the first, we've had two podcasts this month by the time this one's released. And the first one was very much about getting started teaching online one-on-one using Skype and FaceTime and things. Last week we had Mario Ahero, who's a real specialist in technology for piano teachers. So he kind of stepping it up a level, some of the extra technology you can use and sharing keyboards and having the sound come out of your digital piano from the other person's piano and things like that. So this is now... This is now kind of going that extra level of, well, here's another thing you could do. Have one live lesson for a whole group of people, record it so you can make the income from that and then keep selling it too. Really clever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and like anything else, I mean, I've done zero advertising on the classes. It's all been word of mouth. But if your content is compelling, and I can talk more about, you know, how to actually do that, but you know, people will tell each other, and we'll post a thing about it on forums. And so with, you know, every once in a while I'll go and check just to see what the in path was, where was the referral links coming from? And they surprise me all the time. It's like, how did that get all the way to Russia in this, you know, bizarre niche game forum? How did that end up? But that's the beauty of everybody being connected is you don't necessarily, you know, your audience will find it and they'll find you, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
So I want to rewind a little bit back into your history. I can see four, no less than four keyboards behind you and a Stormtrooper mask and a disco ball.
Yeah.
Well, did you start as a pianist, like with piano lessons traditionally?
I was trained classically from the time I started just before I was six and started with the goal of writing music for film. I was five when I made that decision.
Really?
And so I knew what I wanted to do. So I started training at a conservatory, which just happened to be three blocks up the street from my parents' house in Chicago where I was born. So I was actually working professionally writing jingles and commercials when I was 16.
Wow.
It's when I started. So I did that for a few years. Then I came out to Los Angeles to get in the business or whatever.
To make it big.
To do it. And I got a record deal when I was young. I think I was 20 when I signed that first thing. And so I was doing albums and touring and I was a session musician. There aren't as many of them now, but back then you could have a life as a session player. So I'd play on records and commercials and things. And that was just my, that's what I was just going to do, just continue doing that. And then started doing film work. And then along the way, something that was just a hobby of mine, which was sort of the early days of computer visual effects and motion graphics, accidentally became a parallel career. And that led to that's a whole other story. But in the end, today I sort of split my time between doing music work and doing basically every other aspect of post-production. So I Right. direct a lot of commercials, I do color correction work and editing and sound design and just a lot of other, lots of visual effects work. So, which I think it certainly in this business and in this town, maybe everywhere, however you multitask, whether it's inside your field or into you know related fields, I think multitasking is an artist's best trick.
It's,
you know,
it's kind of a given, isn't it?
Yeah, because if one well is empty, another well is full. If there's one opportunity dries up, and they have seasons. There's you know as a composer, you know there's suddenly there's a lot of work, and then there's a year there isn't a lot of work. You know, it's just it goes up and down. And you know, I think even though we've all signed up for a life that may not have the greatest stability in it, having lots of other trees to pick fruit from can help mitigate that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, we'll have to put some links to some of your work in the show notes if that's cool.
Yeah, sure. Of course,
I'd be fascinated to hear about it. I love composing and helping my students compose. I wonder whether your teacher had some skills in that area that drove you down that path, or were you very much self-taught?
You mean as a composer, as a teacher?
As a piano student, as a young boy, did your teacher encourage that stuff?
No, they hated that.
Right. Okay.
what happened was I was studying classically and I was at a conservatory that took it very, very seriously. And all I wanted to do was change the music. I had no reverence or respect for it. I had a teacher with one of the rulers on the knuckles. It was whap. So,
oh my goodness.
Okay. So I did 5 years of that. And then somebody said, you know, you ought to switch over to jazz piano because they like that there.
Yeah.
Great. So I switched over to jazz, and that was actually the first stuff that I was writing was big band and jazz trio and quartet stuff. And my first album was actually a jazz album, but I was playing in rock bands and doing everything else, you know, as a keyboard player. And it was the 80s. So that was the time to be a keyboard player.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
And you've been able to then take all of this experience and the experience you continue to gain in so many different areas. And that's what you're able to then teach people.
Yeah. And that's so, and, you know, having had a formal education, I also learned how much of what I use in my day-to-day professional life was everything I got outside of school, was everything about being on stage and talking and working with musicians and violating virtually every rule that composers are taught to follow, you know, and the things that you just can't necessarily, you can't teach. You have to give somebody the experience. They have to experience it.
Yeah.
So my goal was, you know, to say that with my classes, all the information's in 2016 or whatever, all the information's out there. So it was to me going to be partially the way I gave it to people and what I could give them that you might not necessarily be able to find because professionals guard those secrets so carefully.
Mm.
I wanted there to be a place where they heard everything that they can sense is out there, but nobody says. So that was, I just right away, like, you know, if it was, it's like a magician giving all the tricks away. And so that's built a pretty loyal following.
Yeah. And probably riled some people up as well, I imagine.
Well, you know, I mean, I think only people who, you know, the way I look at it is if what's holding you in the game, if what's keeping you in it is a trick, you know, then you're living in a constant state of fear because it's only a few minutes before that trick is revealed. Mm. And I would much rather succeed on a level playing field. Everybody's got the same bat. Now, how hard do you hit the ball? I prefer that just philosophically. So I can't say that anybody's been upset about it, but I think the only ones who would be upset about it probably have reason to be upset about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you share my philosophy of the teaching that I do with teachers as well. It's like open the doors of our studios, let's share. And that's, you know, that's what I do. So tell us, can you give us a bit of a insider look into one of your lessons? What are they like? How do you structure them?
Okay. You know, well, first of all, I will say there are a couple of them. They're for free on YouTube. I think one of them is called Free for All, in fact.
Okay.
And you can get a sense for certainly is the flavor of it. And what they are is, like I said, they're conversational. They're just like this. It's Friday night. Everybody's usually drinking. Friday night, to be honest.
if you're listening to this and you can hear ice cubes, then
right.
That's Mike having a drink.
You know, and part of that is for me, you know, not being a teacher and not being formally trained in teaching, I nonetheless found out that communication is something I'm decent at, whether it's through music or by being a director and talking to actors, so I just figured, well, just the impromptu way I do the class, rather than have it be super rigid and super structured. I know what I'm going to be talking about, whatever the topic is. If it's a class on, how to develop an idea, well, I could do 15 classes on that. I could talk about that for a year. Yeah. So I will usually start with taking the discipline of reducing things down to very simple, practical things that a composer can walk away from that class right now and be a better composer. That's the discipline, you know, that I ask of myself, like really give them something practical, tangible, simple. And if you've been doing something for 30 years, you should be able to express its essence, you know? So every class has what I call like the magic takeaways, the things that when you listen, you can sit down and have a trick you didn't have before, have an understanding you didn't have before, have a technique, a process, something to conquer any aspect of composing, whether it's orchestration or writing music or how to develop an idea or how to break through sticking points or another aspects of the business, how to negotiate and all those things. So they usually start with, in my mind, a sort of rough idea for the outline of it. But inevitably, the live players will say, well, wait a minute. You know, what about when I didn't sign a contract, you know, or I did sign a contract, but now I want to change it. Okay, well, that piece of information. Okay, well, we can talk about that. Or if we're doing a class on orchestration and I've explained something, I have some tricks. And if somebody says, I didn't understand that. Can you explain that another way? Yeah, we can explain that another way. And just having the opportunity to amend and change and have the input from 50 people, I mean, we end up getting the ideas out in a way that everybody understands and everybody has a takeaway from. Mm. That's the thing that is most reported back to me is people say, you know, I just learned more in an hour than I learned in 4 years at Berkeley. I get that comment all the time. And it doesn't surprise me, because you don't get that sort of personal attention usually, and you don't usually get it from somebody who's literally doing it to make ends meet every day. Mm. So like I said, but they're fun and they're irreverent and cheeky. And I put up, I do this thing. Like I started doing this after the second class. I put up this little red banner before the class.
Okay. So for people that are listening, it's like a warning before the movie comes up. It says the following program has been approved for restricted audiences only by a parent with at least some sense of responsibility. Nice. Yeah.
And I put that up because it was like the second class or something. And somebody asked me a question that just got me going. And I just was like, you know what? I hate this. And I just was immediately, I was on it and dropped a few F-bombs or whatever. And he goes, just give me one moment. My little kid's in the room. That's right. It's not just my house. But that thing where if you see the classes and if you take the classes, that's exactly who I am. It's exactly who I am on a real Friday night. And so it creates a bond between that works both directions. I feel very connected to the people who take the class, and then they feel connected to the work, and then they feel grateful that, wow, I'm better now than I was yesterday.
Yeah,
that's a huge thing when people feel like that for real. I encourage them to send me their work, and they do, and people get better, and that's the sexiest thing in the world.
Yeah, you know? It's really fulfilling as a teacher to do that. That's why I love teaching. Yeah,
so you do too. But I tell them now, look, if you know two things, teach one. Because first of all, you never learn something the way you do when you have to teach it. You know, it just forces you to think about it, forces you to be able to communicate the essence of it, and that makes you better about it. So teaching's huge. Got to do it.
So Mike, you've got an audience of piano teachers listening to this who have, you know, incredible experience, years of teaching and knowledge. How would you say, if they're like, I would love a little bit of extra income, I reckon I could make this work, where would you say that they should start? We'll talk about technology in a second, just conceptually.
Conceptually, here's what I would say. The first thing about, if you decide that you want to do this, and I don't care what online adventure you want to do, start by pre-seeding an audience. I didn't realize this was happening, but I was building my first audience over the course of a year. And those were people who were going to be there on day one. And having some early momentum makes a big difference. It's in any venture. It's why when if they're opening a new McDonald's, the sign is the first thing that goes up. They haven't even put up the walls yet, but the sign goes up. And that's to get people in the neighborhood. Oh, there's a McDonald's coming. There's a thing coming. You know, if you want to do a Kickstarter campaign, you want to get some people who will put in money that you know they're going to put in money on day one, because nobody likes to be a part of a venture that looks like a deserted town. They like to feel like something's already happening. Psychologically, it's good for your audience, it's good for your business model, and it's good for you. You don't want to be sitting there on camera and there's nobody listening.
Absolutely.
It's dark. So I think pre-seeding your audience by joining the communities, finding the people that you already know that you want to talk to, I think that's an important step.
And you did that through forums online.
I did that before.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was accidental. But if I was going to start another business, or my sister was asking about doing something for her business, that's the way you start. Mm. Go find the people right away and start to build some excitement. This is coming. You know, I'm thinking, because you'll gauge. Well, that's the second thing I would say third thing I'll say. Second thing I would say is that the content, everybody says content is king. Yeah. But the chances are that the content is out there in one form or another. So focus on the unique voice that is your delivery, whatever that is. I mean, I'm a big advocate of blurring the line between your professional self and your personal self, just because that's how we are as a society now. We're so connected. We're all Facebook and social media. And you can play that two ways. You can either always be fake on social media and always have to put up your good Instagram photo, or you can go the other way, which is everybody knows everything, so here's who I really am. And so I think personability and your personal voice, something that's uniquely you, the unique way in which you'll teach material, the unique way in which you approach your material, should be present in your message. Otherwise, the information's out there. We're drowning in it. Hmm. So why are they going to come to you and not somebody else? And I think just thinking about, well, because I'm so great. I don't know about that. I don't know that we can count on that. Might be true, might not. But will that get them? I think what gets people is when there's something distinctive, and there's nothing more distinctive than who you. Hmm. The third thing I would say is have an idea of what you want to do. Have your plan, have your best laid plans, but stealthily find out what your audience wants. They'll tell you, especially right after you start. My first few classes immediately were the most instructive on teaching me how my class was going to ultimately go, because I came in with my plan, but the audience helped shape my program. I could tell what they were more interested in. I could see what they were engaging more to. That's why these companies do all these surveys 24 hours a day. Hmm. They want to find out. It's targeted marketing, targeted advertising. The line there is, you don't want to flip it upside down. You don't want the cart to lead the horse. You don't want to just say, well, what do you want? Because people want, you're the teacher. What should I know?
Yeah,
you have to watch dynamic. But I think that rather than have any sort of rigid expectation about what it's going to be, allow yourself the flexibility of your audience to shape your presentation, so that you're fulfilling the client's wants, the customer's needs, while still offering your unique product. Mm. Down to what else? The other thing I would say is, set the expectation right from the beginning for your audience. A lot of times people, when it comes to doing online work or social media work, they'll tell you, you got to have constant media. You have to have constant updates, constant this, constant that. And there's a measure of truth in that. But what they don't say, and what's important to realize is that's relative. Just set it. If you set up your thing that people are expecting an update from you every day, then the one day your kid is sick and you got to take them to the hospital, they're disappointed, you know? And that's because you've set up that expectation. So when you think about what you're going to do, think about what you can really sustain, because you do want it to have momentum. You do want it to have something that people can join your community. And, oh, it's on Thursday nights. I tune into Tim's show on Thursday nights and I'm used to it and I like it and I count on it and I'm part of the Tim Club and all that. That's what people do. Mm. We like to join little groups. So for me, you know, they're always on Friday nights. They're always at the same time. They're always the same flavor. And so there's a community that's built.
Yeah.
And that's your loyal base of people that, you know, that you can count on both from a, you know, programming standpoint and from an income standpoint. And they're probably your most passionate people who are spreading the word. So just, you know, think about that. Mm. When it comes to the aspect about what you should charge, it's the same advice I give composers, which is there is no number. It's whatever number you want it to be. Whatever number is worth the time that you take to do the class, the time it takes to prepare, the time that you didn't spend with your family, what you need to pay your bills for that hour, what you want in creature comforts. Nobody can tell you that number. Mm. Just make sure that that's the number. And if you're worth it, then stick to it. But also don't be afraid of the economies of scale. Like I said, you know, you can sell one class for $1,000. You can sell 1,000 class for $1. Mm. And the truth is today's expectation with you're on a game, my little boy, you know, on his, like, he wants to play a game. It's like, oh, it's just 99 cents. It's like 99 cents. It's nothing. It's like 99 cents. It's not those are multi-million dollar games by the end of the day. So, you know, so just don't be afraid to capitalize on that aspect of our interconnectivity. And the other thing I would say is practice. You know, being on camera and having a personality and being able to engage with people, even being able to be comfortable looking at a camera.
Hmm. Well, you're very good at it. I'm very impressed.
It's practice. Yeah. And it's a show. It's a show. And I think practicing that performer's aspect of it is an important part of letting the audience know that you're in charge and you're comfortable and they're worth your time. You're worth their time. Yeah. Mm. And their money. It's a thing that I see is overlooked a lot. I see a lot of people point a camera at their process, but that's not necessarily personal and engaging. And if it's not personal and engaging, you know, well, there's a lot of impersonal stuff out there already that they get to. So I think that just turning on a camera and watching yourself and getting used to it, because it's really, really weird when you first
Yeah, it is. A lot of people wouldn't realize the time that I put into if I'm doing a presentation, a keynote or something at a conference. You know, I'm practicing, if it's a new presentation I haven't done before, I'm practicing it a lot. And I know everyone in the industry, you don't see it, of course. It's like the performers, you get up on stage and do this amazing Rachmaninoff, whatever. You don't see all the hard work, but as you say, you've got to practice. If it's delivering to a camera or to an audience somehow, you've got to practice it.
But I think too, however you apply those and other principles, I'm sure there's other great pieces of advice. There's no question that it is an absolutely sustainable and viable supplemental income model, if not a primary income model, if you really wanted to work it. I think if you're starting to plan your curriculum or if you're starting to plan what you want to teach, the first thing that you come up against is a very hard, long look at yourself in the mirror about, what do I really have to offer? And and making sure that your skill set is be realistic about what your skill set is, and teach the skill set that you're a master of. Not that you're not going to continue learning, and probably will learn from your students, but I think that you'll speak most confidently, and your presentation will be most compelling about things that you know it at 3 o'clock in the morning, hungover. You know it. That's your wheelhouse, spin it and invite people to it, but have no question about it. Even though there's this huge glut of media out there, there's plenty of opportunity, because there's always turnover too. Somebody gets burned out doing their show.
You know? Yeah.
I'm done. I just can't stand anymore. Okay, now time for your show.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, let's talk technology because I know that can, you know, scare off people sometimes. What do you do for your live shows? If you're going to have 100 people watching, how does that work?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, because I have zero patience for technology. That's just a thing. I'm surrounded by it. I love it. I live with it, all that. But it's like a child. I'm a disciplinarian. It cannot crash. I can't stand it. So for me, you know, when I was gearing up, this comes into the practicing thing. You know, I can build my live show rig blindfolded. It's like a gun. I could just close my eyes and build it. I could just do that. It's bulletproof and it's very simple. What it is, my classes go out. I use I use Wirecast on a laptop, on a Mac laptop. Wirecast is that's my show organizer. It's made by Telestream, and that's been solid and stable. It's got everything that I've needed in the classes, so I can use multiple cameras. I can have multiple audio inputs. It has one of those desktop things. So if I want to show the desktop for my Pro Tools station or a keyboard overlay while I'm playing, I can bring those up and I can do split screens and all that sort of thing by setting up some very simple templates. I can drag media in. If a client says, will you review this piece on the air? I can drag it right in and play it. So that's been my software. I use a.
Is that free or does it cost?
It's a paid product. There's two versions of it. I mean, for an initial investment, I think it's pricey. I think it's $500 or something, or maybe $1,000 for the pro.
So it like? Is it like some other software I would have heard of? I'm just trying to picture exactly what it does. Is it a streaming thing or a webinar thing?
It's a broadcast mixer. So you've got a number of panels, audio, video sources, and it's got one window where like I don't have any source in it here, but this is just an example. It's like how I did the red thing. If this is just a video.
I was going to ask you about how you did that too.
So the Skype is being fed by Wirecast. I run all my audio. And so like the microphone that's being drawn here is going through Wirecast and the camera is going through Wirecast and I have a mixer so I can video mix. You saw the picture in picture up there.
Yeah.
So, you know, those sorts of things. So it just allows me to.
It is brilliant because it's completely seamless. I've never seen such a seamless overlay or transition.
Yeah, and you can do that a couple of different ways. I'm just trying to see here. If I had any show stuff loaded, I don't think I do. But what I will do is I will for each show, I'll usually load up some media beforehand and then I could just click on it and it'll bring it up. It'll bring it up as a transition. I can do, you know, overlays. So it's very, very simple software, but it's very powerful for managing multiple types of media in a show.
Powerful.
I run it off of a laptop. But I'm usually sometimes I do the classes from my piano in the living room. Sometimes I will do them with my Pro Tools, you know, workstation. And so all those things are all on the local internet in the house and they're all sources in Wirecast. So if I want to, if I say, okay, well, let's move to the piano, I've got a camera out there. I just click on the camera and that camera goes on along with the mic that's underneath the piano. And then as long as I'm carrying around something so I can see, you know,
being broadcast.
Then it doesn't. It's very, very flexible.
Wow. And it's never crashed on me. Do you do it all wirelessly?
I have a wired network in the house. It works wirelessly,
but
just to make sure that, you know, we have the highest quality stream, I was able to wire, took everything wired, so I do.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, but the wireless signal, I've never had, you know, I run a reasonable bit rate. It's never had a hiccup in that capacity.
So Wirecast helps you do all the back end and produce the stream and everything.
Is that also
covering the audience side or is that a different bit of software?
Okay. So that's the Wirecast is my production studio. That's where I'm managing the audio and the video and any one of the input media sources. That's where the show is happening.
Yeah.
What's coming out of Wirecast is the produced show, the final image and the final sound that an audience is going to hear. Then what I do is I go and I use Ustream. Ustream is where I host the show.
Right.
So Wirecast natively talks to Ustream. So it's just happening on Ustream. I will usually check the feed to make sure it's okay, but it's just seamlessly happening on Ustream. And Ustream also has a chat role, you know, a social interaction chat. So, and that's the primary way in which students interact with me.
So you keep an eye on the chat role.
Yeah, and that's where I get the questions. When I first started doing it, I did the thing, I was using another service where everybody had a camera and was talking to me, and that never, it never worked when there was 50 or 100 people. It was just this big cluster and the bandwidth would have problems. And I understand that they've since worked all that out, but I've never found that necessary.
So you don't see your students or hear them, they just type, like a webinar.
Just type. Yeah, it's like a webinar. And that's never stopped people from getting their questions answered. In fact, I think it forces them to think about their question. Nobody's ever complained about it. And you know, as much as I love them, I don't actually need to see their living room. You know what I mean? I don't. Yeah. Because it's not a one-on-one. It is for 50, 100 people at a time or whatever it is. And lots of times, you know how that is. You do a thing, you got a spotlight in your face anyway. You can't see anybody out there.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's worked out. That's been my process so far.
And for the replays, are they hosted still on Ustream or somewhere else?
Okay, so what happens is when you sign up for the class, you get the login, the password that's valid for that night. It's password protected. So only people with the password can sign on to the live stream. Those people, after the show is over, the classes get uploaded to my Vimeo channel.
Oh yeah.
And also password protected. And anybody who was at the live class automatically gets the password for the Vimeo channel. Any future people who buy it get the Vimeo channel link and the password.
Okay. Got it.
And so they go and they can just view it there and take their time with it.
And does Ustream handle all the signups and link sending and all that stuff?
I have been doing that quasi manually for 4 years. And in fact, my website right now is pulled apart because the web store is finally being completely automated. I just needed to do it for 4 years and didn't.
Oh my goodness.
But at this point, yeah, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
Some point I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. So now it's all entirely automated. You know, I won't even know about it.
Is that a separate software?
That's just pay. I'm using a WooCommerce for my website.
Oh, okay.
And PayPal. So,
yeah.
And that's also allowed me now to use affiliate links. So, because other websites have said, well, we want to put links to your classes, you know, for a little discount and a little kickback and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that now will all get automated once they're registered. If they sign up with that thing, then they'll get their percentage. The person will get the links in the class and
just go.
Yeah.
I can't believe you were doing manual emails and links for years. Oh my goodness. It must have been going crazy.
But it also, you know, like I think that goes to the fact that, you know, it's all very personal and homegrown, you know, it's the nature of it. Even if the scale might betray that, it's always felt like that. So
just to kind of to recap, you're using a software called Wirecast, which takes all the different feeds from different cameras and allows you to mix in the audio, and it produces a stream that you take, a video product that you take to Ustream, which is the place where people sign on to watch and interact with you. And I'm thinking Wirecast is obviously a little bit of an investment. I would imagine if a teacher listening to this wanted to try it out, they could try the same concept with Google Hangouts or some other software options just to test the waters and see how it goes.
Yeah, because, you know, depending on your thing, you may not need a whole lot of multiple setups. And there's a million ways to skin this cat. You know, I come from a post-production background. I had a post-production studio for many years. So I was used to having a production switcher. You know, that's how I ran the facility, where we could just route audio and video and any kind of media around to different workstations or client areas. And so that was sort of my brain works. And I was sort of spoiled by it. And I was like, well, I need a video switcher in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you don't have to do that.
No, it does. I got to say, that looked so professional. I can't believe it. When you put that overlay up before, I'm like, how the hell did he do that? That was great. Really
So
good.
yeah. So, and if look, and if the income that you're making is, you know, commensurate with, you know, it just, there's, you'll know if it's worth it. You'll know the investment is worth it, you know, or not. And if not, there are plenty of simpler ways to do it. That's my way.
So for you, you said you're up to 50 or 60 grand, let's say, income from this.
Yeah.
Yeah, significant amount. Would it ever be something that you would like to do, you know, more of and make a complete living out of?
I think if I spent any time at all on advertising, or spent any time at all trying to recruit new people, you probably could double that. That's
right.
I mean, which again, is that a lot or not a lot? I don't know. It sort of depends. You know, living in Los Angeles, 60 grand is like, that's like your groceries for a month. It's ridiculous how expensive it is out here. But, you know, but that again, that's, you know, that's the, that that's a volume sales model. Its classes are $30, for Christ's sake. You know, but like I said, it's not my primary income. I think I could make it, but I also like not being beholden to. I think I didn't do a class for almost 7 or 8 months in this last trench here because I was working on other projects.
Yeah,
which actually then became the first class that I did. The first class back was, okay, I'm going to take you through this whole project that I did.
That's cool. Yeah,
it was a film score, and so it was a 9-hour class just going through how I scored the whole film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
brilliant.
Just, we were on a roll, man.
For
$30. Yeah. People fell asleep and woke up, and then they said, "Oh my God, you're still going." It's like, well, we're almost at the end. We're almost at the credits. Just how it was.
That's
a lot of fun.
Great. That is awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. Cool.
Can you give us an example of just a few of your recent lessons, like the topics?
Yeah. I have composition one and composition two and orchestration one and orchestration two on those cover things that seem very elementary, except, you know, the way that I teach them, I have a lot of professionals who take them and say, wow, you just put something together I never thought of. I have classes on like one's called Kickstarters. Another one's called Secret Weapons. And those are sort of like, you know, when the well's dry and you have no ideas, here's a bunch of things that you can do to kickstart your ideas. I have classes on rhythm and percussion. I have classes on writing horror music, action sequences for films.
Wow.
I have a class that's on the business, like just negotiating and dealing, how not to be afraid of the clients and not be afraid to ask for the money that you're worth or whatever. What else? I have classes where I've analyzed the works of some famous composers. So I have two classes on John Williams. I have a class on James Horner, people, you know, that inspired me and sort of taking the piss out of them a little bit, breaking them down and showing where they learned and stole all their stuff from and stuff and, you know, love and respect and all that. And so what else do I have class on? I mean, just lots of different ones.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I mean, many of them, they would fascinate me. I'd love to learn more about lots of those things.
Oh yeah, they're fun. And some of them were, you know, some of them I'd be like, you know what, I don't know what you guys want to know. And so, like somebody said, I think I was 2 years in the class and somebody said counterpoint. And I was like, how did I never once think of doing a counterpoint class? So, okay, that afternoon, fine, counterpoint next Friday.
Really?
So
people
yeah.
wanted to know about counterpoint.
Yeah, because you know, the way I teach, it's, you know, if, in a nutshell.
If you can make counterpoint exciting and fun, I'm there.
It's a good, it's a fun class. But that's the thing about it is I think music is usually presented in a way, but the analogy that I use is, especially for composers, they look at all these huge disciplines. They look at composition and orchestration and all the voice leading rules, and they look at having to learn all the instruments and the ranges and think about transpositions, and they have to think about, you know, counterpoints and all these things. And it just seems like it's this giant, enormous thing. But the truth is that there's a way in which to think about music and a way to teach music that is much more in tune with the way your brain learns. And it's the same mechanism by which we learn to walk. You know, you can't walk consciously. You couldn't do it. There's a bill. You can't think this muscle fires and then this tendon pulls and this, and then I balance in my ear. And then there's two, it's, you couldn't do it if you tried. There's a billion things going on that you're not even aware of. And yet not only can you walk, you can run and dance and do acrobatics. So there's a way to think about all of these hyper complex disciplines, all at once and all together that actually makes it a lot simpler to understand and to recognize patterns and work with it. So once we turn that switch on and get you to look at it differently, then actually all those extra disciplines are, they don't become like another level. They become just like another flavor in something you're already doing.
Now you've really got me intrigued.
It's I wouldn't be doing the classes. One thing I always say in the classes is we're going to stay on the air until everybody has something that's profound, that they're just a little, like, I want everybody to have that moment where they're like, wait a minute, wow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and you know, if you really work at it and think about it, there's a lot of those moments to be had, and everybody loves that feeling. Everybody loves to be smart, and everybody loves to see something that looks so intangible and so complicated, and suddenly they're like, oh my God, I get it. I never got it. I totally get it. That's the best for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So be done, even about something as complicated and you know, seemingly like mystical as music.
Totally. Have you got a favorite film composer?
Well, John Williams is the reason. I saw Star Wars when I was 5. That's the movie. I came out of the movie theater and told my mom I wanted to write music for movies. So,
wow.
So John Williams' score that first one that, you know, that, I mean, literally started a program running. And, you know, and to be perfectly frank, a lot of the calls that I get for work are for writing in that sort of style, in that sort of idiomatic style. If you listen to, you know, I've got a piece online that's called The Race. It's on YouTube, and you'll hear right away, you'll hear the influences in there. But many others. James Horner was a huge influence. Alan Silvestri, Jerry Goldsmith. But then later, of course, I went back and discovered all the symphonic roots where they stole all their material from. So it was all back in Ravel and Shostakovich and, yeah, you know, all the greats. Yeah.
Have you ever met John Williams?
No, not personally. He lives actually just up the street. I've seen him a bunch coming out of his house. He sent me a nice note about some of my work once. But we just never crossed paths. We use the same recording engineer, Sean Murphy.
You're gonna have to meet him one day and tell him that he's the reason why you're doing what you're doing. Surely.
What had happened was we had just crossed paths, but not met in so many times that I eventually just sit down and I penned him a note. I wrote it. I didn't type it. I wrote it, and it was one of those notes that I probably spent 30 years thinking up, and I had sent him one of the pieces of my work, and it was just a thank you, and this is what you did, this is your fault kind of, you know, note. And true to his nature and his reputation, he was just so gracious and encouraging, and you know, so. I feel like I've had my John Williams thing. I'm almost afraid that maybe the man wouldn't be as exciting. But I've had that. I have my note from him, and I have that in my special place. And so
I'm
that's
thinking
cool.
Now, oh, he'd be a good podcast guest too.
Yeah.
We'll have to get you to hook me up.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, look, thank you so much for your time today. I'm kind of going to start wrapping it up. Where can people find out more about you and your courses?
Well, you know, right now, like I said, the website's pulled apart. I'll give you that. It's usually just mikeverta.com.
So mikeverta.com.
Yeah, and that'll work 9/10 of the time. If you go in the next few days, it's probably still going to be down. Just put /WordPress and you can get back. You can get into it anyway.
Okay. I think I found you through Google, actually, because, yeah, the websites were a bit what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, like I said, the developers have all pulled it apart. But in there, there'll be the music links to the music stuff that I've done, and then all the visual effects and graphics and directing and everything else is all in there. And there's a section on where all the master classes are listed, the descriptions of them, and the links to buy them and all that. So, yeah. But in the meantime, definitely go check out, you know, the ones that are free. Just YouTube my name and they'll all come up.
Okay, perfect.
And a bunch of podcasts, free podcasts, a bunch of there's like technique classes, one where I reviewed student compositions for 6 hours.
Wow.
That was one, and in there actually were all the ones from when I was a kid. I would secretly throw them in and just destroy them. Just so people didn't feel bad. But that was actually a really popular class that got a lot of followers. So those are free. Check those out and you get the flavor, the whole thing. You'll get it.
Brilliant.
So,
and we'll chuck a whole lot of links on the show notes page and maybe embed some YouTubes. I'll go through and have a look. I'm looking forward to exploring your stuff. It has just been awesome to talk with you. I really, really enjoyed it.
Man, I appreciate the opportunity. Anytime to just to talk. So, and you know, your stuff is great. So I'll just send you links. You don't have to pay. I'll just give you some
okay.
connections.
I appreciate
just
it.
Hit me up.
And look, you're the specialist in this. Is there anything I've forgotten to ask you that you're just like, oh my God, he's got to ask me this question or anything?
No, you know, I think you've done a really good job of covering the bases. And I think just, you know, I mean, just your being the sort of aggregator, you know, and letting people, because I know I've seen some of your podcasts. I looked once we talked. You know, you've provided a lot of information from a lot of various people with a lot of different takes on it. And that in and of itself, just focusing it down, I mean, is so crucial. It makes it mortal and gives people confidence to do it. So you've done a huge, huge, great service that way. And I'm really honored to have been an opportunity to share some of what I've done, because this stuff is fun and it's viable. And, you know, the world needs more good teachers.
Yeah, that's it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Let's wrap it up there. Great to work with you today, and we'll keep in touch.
Thanks, brother. Thanks again.
All right. Night. See ya.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.